Would you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday and it had you talking at the socialist community.
Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
That was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly. No.
If you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying.
We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
You're listening to Grant Edwards, 88.1 FM, The Wireless, the world at five.
You know, one thing that Davos, you might say, and the people come here stand up for is liberal democracy.
Well, it's laughable that you would, or anyone would describe Davos as protecting liberal democracy. It's equally,
standing up for it.
It's equally laughable to use the word dictatorship at Davos and aim that at President Trump. In fact, I think that's absurd. But I'm going to step aside from that constructive criticism and instead answer your question. President Trump, if he's the next president, for that matter, I think whoever the next conservative president is going to take on the power of the elites. The very reason that I'm here at Davos is to explain to many people in this room and who are watching, with all due respect, nothing personal, but that you're part of the problem. Political elites tell the average people on 3 or 4 or 5 issues that the reality is X, when in fact reality is Y. Take immigration. Elites tell us that open borders and even illegal immigration are okay. The average person tells us in the United States that both rob them of the American way of life. They're right. President Trump will take that on behalf of the average American. Elites also tell us that public safety isn't a problem in big American cities. Just travel to New York or Washington or Dallas, Texas. The average person will tell you that the lack of public safety damages not just the American way of life, but their life. President Trump will take that on. I guess the favorite at the World Economic Forum. Climate change. Elites tell us that we have this existential crisis with so-called climate change, so much so that climate alarmism is probably the greatest cause for mental health crisis in the world. The solutions the average person know based on climate change are far worse and more harmful and cost more human lives, especially in Europe during the time that you need heating, than do the problem and the problems themselves. The fourth, China. The number one adversary, not just to the United States, but to free people on planet Earth. Not only do we at Davos not say that, we give the Chinese Communist Party a platform. Count on President Trump ending that nonsense. Fired by the wise words of Javier Milei, who said that he was in power not to guide sheep, but to awaken lions. That's what the average American and the average free person on planet Earth wants.
In daytime, you've got a certain demographic, as you guys know, because a lot of people are at work, and you guys are such a part of America's fabric. It's fun to go on late at night. I mean, at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
You can say things that Brian doesn't let us say anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
I've already been getting some warnings about that. You can only go so far.
So tell us about what you've been working on.
4 hours of news every day. We're going to tell people the facts and let them make up their own mind about whether it's good news or bad news.
Yeah.
It's not going to be spin. We're just gonna, here's what happened. You decide whether it's good news or bad news. Talking about real challenges, looking for real solutions.
So you say you're not the only voice in your kids' ears, so you have to be the best voice.
Kids started, they stopped living their lives and started watching people live their lives.
Mm.
And so we saw the biggest spike and the highest levels of depression, anxiety, loneliness, and suicidality since records have ever been kept.
Mm.
And it's just continued on and on and on. Then COVID hits 10 years later, and the same agencies that knew that are the agencies that shut down the schools for 2 years. Who does that? Who takes away the support system for these children? Who takes them away and shuts it down? And by the way, when they shut it down, they stopped the mandated reporters from being able to see children that were being abused and sexually molested, and in fact sent them home and abandoned them to their abusers with no way to watch, and referrals dropped 50 to 60%.
So there was also a pandemic going on, and they were trying to save
children. They were trying to save kids' lives. Remember, we know a lot of folks who died during this. So it wasn't, people weren't laying around eating bonbons. Well, you know what? We're lucky. Maybe we're lucky they didn't, because we kept them out of the the places that they could be sick because no one wanted to believe we had an issue.
Are you saying no school children died of COVID?
I'm saying it was the safest group. They were the less vulnerable group, and they suffered and will suffer more from the mismanagement of COVID than they will from the exposure to COVID. And that's not an opinion. That's a fact.
Phil, we don't even have time to talk it out now, man. Thanks for coming. The new book is called We've Got Issues.
Police have made a second arrest during their investigation into a homicide in Mangamuka in the far north. On Sunday night, emergency services were called to a property in Iwitawa Road in Mangamuka around 9 p.m. following reports of a stabbing. A man was pronounced dead at the scene and a 50-year-old man was arrested nearby. He's been charged with murder and appeared in the Kaikohe District Court on Monday. In an update on Monday afternoon, Detective Inspector Al Simons, Northern CIB, said a 39-year-old female has been taken into custody. The woman has been charged with possession of an offensive weapon and is due to appear in the Kaitaia District Court on Tuesday, the 5th of March. A homicide investigation remains ongoing. He said, "We cannot rule out further arrests or charges in relation to this incident as our inquiries continue." Police are urging anyone with information regarding the incident to call 105 or provide information online.
When you have a bad day, give up. Go home and sleep. Try again tomorrow. Not every bad day can become a good day. Some days are and cannot be unfed. When you have a day that is beyond repair, that is the universe.
Now China is funding America's public schools. Communist nation has channeled $17 million into more than 143 K-12 districts. You know what this means, right? You know little Johnny, fourth grade, when he comes home from school with his shirt inside out because there was an American flag on it and it offended somebody? Yeah, you know little Johnny, the kid who had his fourth grade social studies class taught to him by a drag queen today? Little Johnny, man! That kid who doesn't know why his lady gym teacher's built like a linebacker and got a mustache. Well, here's what China investing in public schools means for little Johnny. When little Johnny comes home from school and you ask him, what did you learn today? He's not going to tell you anything about the Constitution. He's not going to tell you anything about the Declaration of Independence. He's not going to tell you about the Founding Fathers of America. He doesn't know how many states there are. No, little Johnny's not going to tell you anything about that. He's going to tell you about critical race theory and identity politics and how men can have babies. And the whole time he's going to be looking at you like you're an idiot because you don't understand anything he says. Because he'll be speaking Chinese. The TVs are made in China, and the phones are made in China, and the couch is made in China, and the car is made in China, and everything's made in China. Maybe the kids shouldn't be.
In the past several times, you have denounced the World Economic Forum, and you've made it clear, pledged that if your party forms government, you will ban your cabinet ministers from being involved with the World Economic Forum. Yet, I'm also aware of many Canadians who applaud you for saying that, but also have reservations on whether or not the claim is authentic, because they see images of your name being on the World Economic Forum site, and also because you worked closely with former MP John Baird, who at one point was a World Economic Forum young global leader in campaign. For those concerned about foreign globalist organizations potentially encroaching on our nation's sovereignty, does your pledge to ban cabinet ministers from being associated with or involved with the WEF expand to those you hire as staff as well as advisors?
Yes. No staff, no ministers, no MPs in my caucus will be involved whatsoever in that organization. It is a group of high-flying, high-tax, high-carbon hypocrites who all got on their private jets to fly off to a remote ski village where they talked about how working-class people should not be allowed to heat their homes or drive their pickup trucks. I'm not going to work for a group of globalist billionaires who serve their own interests at the expense of everyone else. And I'd like to specifically point out Mark Carney. Here he was celebrating the central banks who caused the inflation by printing trillions of dollars. Multimillionaires like him could have their asset values inflated while the purchasing power of working class people and seniors was wasted away by inflation. A massive wealth transfer from the have-nots to the have-yachts. We will bring home control of our democracy and we'll make this a country that works for its people, the common people, and the common sense of the common people united for our common home. Thank you.
Now, the Prime Minister is defending the government's plan to crack down on gangs, despite it being called a laughable PR stunt. The Māori Party believes the proposal, if enforced, would breach the Treaty of Waitangi. Well, it would breach the Bill of Rights, and said they'll be held to play. So threatening bit of violence there. The Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, said he's used to the Māori Party making such comments. He said, oh, look, the Māori Party are prone to a lot of hyperbole and a lot of excessive statements, he told News Hub host Lloyd Burr. He said that on Tuesday. He said, the bottom line is this. We have had 50% gang growth in more than 50%, gang growth in membership, and it's not great for young people. Gangs peddle misery, suffering across the many New Zealand families with respect to organised crime and drugs and intimidation and fear and violence. That's not something that we're going to tolerate anymore. So, I'm sorry, but we're going to do something different. Either we try something different or we get different outcomes, or we just carry on doing more and more of the same, more increasing in gang membership, more violent crime, more retail crime in New Zealand. On Monday, a lifetime mongrel mob member, Harry Tam, he also lashed out at the government over its gang crackdown. He said, "I can't help but laugh about it in reality because it's just so stupid," he told News Hub. But Luxon shrugged his shoulders and said, "I don't care about Harry Tam. My friend is irrelevant." During the AM interview, Luxon was asked if he cared about the Opotiki Māori wardens, which also described the crackdown as laughable. "The Māori wardens do a great job," said Luxon. "We really like the work they do." The Prime Minister said that, but the reality is that we have had a 31% increase in violent crime, and we campaigned on this, and people are over it, and they just want to feel safe again. So we're going to make tough decisions, and the reality is gangs want all the rights of being Kiwis, but they're not prepared to take responsibility. Among the plans in the crackdown include a ban on gang insignia in public and police officers being granted special powers to disperse gang gatherings. So those things there, both those go against, forget about the Treaty of Waitangi, they go against the Bill of Rights. So it'll be interesting to see how the government gets on that one.
The Nazi regime shipped 150 healthy Jewish women to this pharmaceutical company to test its products. Literally, within 6 months, there's letters back to the Third Reich from this pharmaceutical company saying, "Thank you so much for your cooperation. The women arrived in great health and working order. Unfortunately, none of them made it through the initial phases of our trial. They killed 150 women. We kindly request that you send us another 150 women." That little company became Bayer, which is now a mega pharmaceutical company.
Now, the Prime Minister is refusing to allow cameras in to see the state of Premier House, the official Prime Ministerial residence he's elected not to live in, claiming it's not up to scratch. News Hub wanted to show people how the proposed renovation budgeted at tens of millions of dollars was justified as the government looks to slash programs like food and schools to save cash. But Luxon, Prime Minister Luxon, I should beg your pardon, won't let News Hub in, which he says is due to security reasons. Fair enough. The most premier of houses fit for the Prime Minister or not, according to Luxon. He said, "At the moment, there are repairs and maintenance that are going on at the apartment, and I couldn't live there even if I wanted to. But you'll have to take his word for it," according to News Hub, because they won't let them in. He won't let them in to have a look at what's going on. There has been a long-standing convention around security issues, just in terms of it being a long-standing tradition not to share interior photos. Fair enough. I don't know why News Hub can't accept this. Former Prime Minister and current Labour leader Chris Hipkins said he wouldn't have a problem with that. A report into the House's state is reported to say it is drafty, uninsulated and dated with 30-year-old furnishings and needs tens of millions spent on it. There's no way, I think, in a cost of living crisis where we are trying to ask people to have fiscal discipline, that I can actually go to the New Zealand people and say, "I think we should spend tens of millions of dollars on upgrading Premier House," Luxon said. It's dated, but nowhere does it state it's uninhabitable. In fact, the last Prime Minister to live there full time brought up her baby daughter, Neve. A lot has happened since the former Prime Minister was in the house, Luxon said. Not only did Luxon elect to choose probably have to have the place cleaned out from all the pee that's been smoked in there. Not only did Luxon elect to choose his own accommodation, he also decided to claim a $52,000 a year allowance to live in his own mortgage-free apartment. On Friday, he fiercely defended it, saying he was entitled to do it as a member of parliament who didn't actually live in Wellington. The public backlash was so swift and strong that he climbed down within a couple of hours, acknowledging that it was becoming a distraction. It all comes as the government looks to slash 6.5% of spending out of the public service. Acts David Seymour on Monday said he wanted to cut back on food and school program. Luxon won't commit on reviewing MPs' perks as part of the public service cuts. He said that we have said to the parliamentary services, all public agencies, we are expecting everybody to generate savings and efficiencies and look at what they need to do. With respect to MPs' remuneration, it is handled by the Independent Remuneration Authority. Kiwi Rail teams will return to work on Auckland's Western Line in March as they seek to complete rebuilding a series of tracks on the railway network. Sites between Newmarket and New Lynn will be worked on from March the 10th through to early May. Between the 11th of March and the 24th of April, trains will only be able to run on one of two tracks while the other is being worked on, according to Kiwi Rail. Over this period, trains will run on a reversed schedule every 20 minutes throughout the day and every 30 minutes in the evening. Auckland Transport Director of Public Transport and Activity Modes, Stacey van der Putten, said, "We do expect there will be times when services are very, very busy, especially during the morning peak when both workers and students are travelling at the same time. To manage the demand, the Western Line service will have six carriages at peak times and there will also be an additional bus running. Working on the rail network rebuild began over Christmas during the network-wide shutdown when trains weren't running, as much of the infrastructure work was completed, but they now need to finish the job." The announcement comes after a turbulent February for Auckland Transport, where high temperatures and track issues were blamed for a swathe of train cancellations. Kiwi Rail Chief Asset Development Officer David Gordon said the railway network rebuild is removing the need for heat and temporary speed restrictions, which slow down commuter trains now. The work is also necessary if the railway network is to keep up with the increasing frequency of trains that will arise once the City Rail Link is up and running. Work under the railway network rebuild includes drainage improvement work, replacing ballast, that's the stones that the tracks sit in, and replacing sleepers and rail when necessary. Gordon said most of the work will be done at night and on the weekends, but some work will need to be done during the day. He said in previous railway network rebuild stages, we've had to close sections of the network for months at a time. We have been able to avoid this high level of disruption for the Western Line work, but we also appreciate that the reduced services are an inconvenience for commuters. Van der Putten said, "We continue to be grateful for our customers' patience and flexibility." She also pointed out that the 7 weeks of disruption, 2 weeks will be school holidays when things will be quieter. During the work, buses will stop at all stations between New Lynn and Newmarket every 10 minutes from 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m. on weekdays. There will also be more buses on the 22N route, which connects Western Line stations between New Lynn and Kingsland with the city centre. Kiwi Rail is in ongoing discussions with the government about securing funding to complete the rest of the rail network rebuild across Auckland, which would focus on the Western Line past New Lynn and further foundation replacement work on the Southern Line south of Otahuhu.
There had been two reports now in the New York Post from the gossip columnist Cindy Adams, but that's twice now she's saying she's heard this, and I've heard it as well, that there's been a reach out. So maybe it's true. I mean, the donors are going to talk about it if they get a reach out from Michelle or Barack Obama about whether there's an appetite for her. And the one thing I know, Paul, is that if she wants it, I believe she'll get it. I know that many people believe Joe Biden won't step aside, and I agree he'll try not to. I just think the din in support of Michelle Obama in Democrat circles will be so loud, he won't be allowed to ignore it. So, and I think his numbers are going to go down this year. Yes, Trump's negatives are going to go down too, but Biden's going to have a slip or a fall. Something's going to happen to him. And I just think crisis is coming the Democrats' way, not just the Republicans. And she'll be the answer. That's what they'll think. I don't know how it's going to shake down, but I'm not ruling it out like other people's are.
The teacher in Batley who showed one of the Muhammad cartoons, as I understand it, in a discussion and a debate in his class about...
He's still in hiding.
Yeah. And that school didn't stand by him. And the police didn't stand by him. And when those bearded thugs turned up outside, they should have been arrested. They were engaged in intimidation.
I bet you didn't know that Kurt Cobain was probably trans.
Kurt Cobain was a drug addict
and a rock star. That's why he wore girls' clothes, not because he was trans. Rock stars have been wearing girls' clothes for a long time. Ozzy Osbourne, David Bowie, Kiss. See, dudes wearing girls' clothes used to be like an anti-establishment thing in rock and roll. Anti-establishment. But now the establishment wants you to ignore your biology, deny your chromosomes, put on a dress, stick a rainbow napkin up your ass, and run around on an elementary school playground identifying as Mickey Mouse. Not really the same thing. Anyway, Kurt Cobain is awesome. But you suck. And I'm dropping a brand new music video this Friday at 9 a.m. with a very special guest. And no one is going to be wearing girl clothes. New music video this Friday, 9 a.m. Special guest. Let's go.
Major bank ASB has dropped some of its home lending rates for the second time in a week. The ASB made the announcement on Monday morning, with the bank saying this will be welcome news to homeowners battling the cost of living crisis. The bank slashed its one-year lending rate by 10 basis points from 7.39% to 7.29%. On top of that, ASB also reduced its two-year lending rate from 6.89% to 6.85%. The major bank has also increased its six-month term deposit rate by 5 basis points to 6.05%. The pricing change came into effect on Monday morning. Monday's rate change came after the bank dropped its 18-month mortgage rate last week by 26 basis points to 6.89%. ASB's Chief General Manager Personal Banking, Adam Boyd, said we regularly review our rates and the reduction of some of our key mortgage terms in part reflects how swamp rates have responded to the Reserve Bank decision to hold the official cash rate at 5.5%. He said, we know that the rising cost of living is affecting customers and alleviating a bit of pressure will be welcome news for homeowners in this current environment. The move comes just days after the Reserve Bank held the official cash rate at 5.5%, in line with what many economists predicted. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand said the New Zealand economy had evolved broadly and core inflation and most measures of inflation had declined. The bank said the risk of the inflation outlook were now more balanced.
The chant from the river to the sea. Yeah, let's look at the map. Here's the river. Here's the sea. Oh, I see. It means you get all of it. Not just the West Bank, which was basically the original UN partition deal you rejected because you wanted all of it and always have, even though it's indisputably also the Jews' ancestral homeland. And so you attacked and lost. And attacked again, and lost. And attacked again, and lost. As my friend Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? Look at what Mexico used to own, all the way up to the top of California. But no Mexican is out there chanting from the Rio Grande to Portland, Oregon, because they chose a different path. They got real and built a country that's the world's 14th biggest economy now, because they knew the United States wasn't going to give back Phoenix any more than Hamas will ever be in Tel Aviv.
The weekend update from batshit bonkers Britain, where, despite having found half a face Abdul, another body has turned up in the Thames. Many of us Brits are starting to wonder if the Thames has got a higher body count than even the Clintons over in America. In other news, Shamima Bubblegum is not going to be allowed back into the UK. It's cost the taxpayer about £6 million so far to line the pockets of lefty lawyers. She will, of course, be let in eventually, because what's another Islamist when the Speaker of the House of Commons is being royally rogered up the arse all the way from the river to the sea. And finally, Google have said it may have a problem with its AI program Gemini because it can only make black people, a black pope, black Vikings, even black founding fathers, which is all right until you ask it who's responsible for the majority of gun violence in Chicago. And then it's a black person, and that's clearly racist. That's it from Batshit Bonkers Britain.
The price of common food items saw a dramatic increase of more than 50% in New Zealand over the past year. Similar spikes seen in other parts of the world in the most poorest countries. A report released on Thursday by World Vision shows the cost of 10 common foods, including rice, bananas, chicken, tomatoes, eggs and oil. They had increased by 56% locally in New Zealand, despite food prices trending downward internationally. The government price came in at $78.32 compared with $50.16 during the previous year. The research examined food prices in 67 countries for these commonplace items compared to prices a year ago. 29% drop was seen in Australia, while a 61% spike was seen in the likes of Sudan. Ethiopia saw a 43% jump, while Honduras, like New Zealand, also spiked 56%. 9 of the top 10 countries experiencing highest food prices are in the sub-Saharan Africa, where many face violent protracted conflicts. Apparently they also are suffering from climate change extremes, which is nonsense, and displacement. World Vision Head of Advocacy and Justice, Rebecca Armstrong, said New Zealand, like other countries, was grappling with climate change. Nonsense, Rebecca. Climate change's effect on food supply. Absolute rubbish. It's just weather, darling. New Zealand joins many of the counterparts around the world in paying more for food due to import costs. It's more to do with the blimmin' Muslim Houthis attacking shipping. That's what was put the prices up. Also, the impact of climate change rubbish. This is just a climate change propaganda piece. Related food price inflation, she said. Well, she's just a nut bar, isn't she? We're all feeling the financial pain of buying food, but this report shows clearly how markedly the cost of basic staples have increased in New Zealand. We know that some of this is due to Cyclone Gabrielle. A lot of it is, and a lot of it's due to the blimmin' Houthis, because a lot of the stuff we get from overseas. Gosh, you're talking nonsense. New Zealand experienced a 56% increase in the cost of food basket. Yeah, we just said that. A big repeat there, just a repeat. And, more rubbish. All climate change bull dust. There it is. Eggs. They've done something to the chook food, if you ask me. There's something wrong with the chooks. They're not laying eggs like they used to. I think I had 10 chooks, and I used to get something like 6 dozen a week. Now I'm lucky if I get a dozen a week. So you've done something to the food. Come on, own up. You know you have. Anyway, that's that story done and dusted.
And when I was speaking here 7 years ago, after having written a book about the fourth industrial revolution, I showed how this revolution will change how we live, how we act, how we communicate, how we produce, and how we consume. And I did something maybe unusual. I took ChatGPT, and I had a long discussion with ChatGPT, with my pot, if I may say so, to see how this new era will look like. And finally, I had about 20 pages of text, and I asked ChatGPT, summarize the text and tell me now, based on our discussion, how will the new era, the intelligent era, look like? And I read you the text. Envisioning a future propelled by the technologies of the fourth industrial revolution, we see a new dawn of human civilization, one that harmonizes technology with the deepest needs and aspirations of humanity. This vision unfolds within a society where artificial intelligence, robotics, the Internet of the Things, 3D printing, genetic engineering, quantum computing become the foundations of our daily life.
How dare you!
The US Supreme Court could issue a ruling as early as March the 4th regarding a case that seeks to bar former President Donald Trump from appearing on primary and general election ballots for the 2024 presidential election. The Supreme Court, in an unusual Sunday update on its schedule, didn't specify what ruling it would issue. However, the justices on February the 8th heard arguments in the former president's appeal of a ruling in Colorado and are due to issue their own decision. On March the 3rd, the announcement said the opinion would be posted online at 10 a.m. Washington time. The court will not take the bench. Is only what was said on the website. Last year, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that President Trump is disqualified from appearing on ballots in Colorado, citing an interpretation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment provision that stipulates that the candidates who engage in an insurrection or rebellion against the United States should be prevented from holding office. Maine's Democratic Secretary of State made a similar decision that days later, and a judge in Illinois recently issued a similar ruling to prevent his appearance on ballots. The amendment was drafted more than 150 years ago after the Civil War, and the court was the first to invoke it. However, that ruling and two others are on hold, pending the Supreme Court decision. The former president appealed the Colorado court ruling to the Supreme Court, which took up the matter quickly. Oral arguments in the case were heard last month. Notably, the Supreme Court has until now never ruled on the provision of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. The court indicated this weekend that at least one case would be decided on March the 4th, although it didn't indicate which one. Except for when the end of the term nears late June, the court almost always issues decisions on days when the justices are scheduled to take the bench. But the next scheduled court date is March the 15th, and apart from during the coronavirus pandemic, or plandemic as we like to call it here, when the court was closed, the justices almost always read summaries of their opinions in the courtroom itself. If the resolution of the case comes on March the 4th, a day before Super Tuesday primary contest in 16 states, it would remove uncertainty about whether votes for President Trump, the leading Republican candidate for president, will ultimately count. Colorado and Maine are two of the states that will hold the GOP primary during March the 5th Super Tuesday contest. Lawyers for the president, or former president, asked the nine justices to reverse the Colorado court decision because only Congress can make the determination as to who become president. The court's decision is also the first time in the history of the United States that the judiciary has prevented voters from casting ballots for the leading major party presidential candidate, his lawyers said, concluding that it is not and cannot be correct. After the ruling, President Trump wrote on social media that he is not an insurrectionist, adding that President Joe Biden is one. He also noted that he told supporters to protest peacefully and patriotically during the rally on the 6th of January 2021, before the protesters and rioters entered the U.S. Capitol during the certification of electoral votes for the 2020 election, which forms the basis of the insurrection accusation against him. Justices for the Colorado Supreme Court had argued that they believe President Trump engaged in an insurrection because of his activity before and on January the 6th, 2021, during the breach of the U.S. Capitol building. The former president, however, was never charged or convicted of insurrection. He was charged by a federal special counsel in connection with the 2020 election, but not for insurrection, rebellion, or related charges. President Trump asks us to hold the Section 3 disqualifies three oath-breaking insurrectionists, except the most powerful one, and that it bars oath breakers from virtually every office, both state and federal, except the highest one in the land. The majority for the Colorado Supreme Court vote in its 4-3 ruling. Both results are inconsistent with the plain language of and history of Section 3. Oral arguments. Now, during the oral arguments in front of the justices in early February, at least six of the justices, including Chief Justice John Roberts, who was nominated by President George W. Bush, appeared to be at least skeptical of some of the claims made by the lawyers representing several Colorado voters who brought the lawsuit against the Republican front runner. It'll come down to just a handful of states that are going to decide the presidential election, Chief Justice Roberts said, referring to the potential effects of the Colorado court ruling. That's pretty daunting consequences. Justice Clarence Thomas asked the lawyer Jason Murray why there weren't many examples of individual states disqualifying candidates under the 14th Amendment after the Civil War. There were a plethora of Confederates still around, and there were any number of people who could continue to either run for state office or national offices. So it would seem that would suggest there would be at least a few examples of national candidates being disqualified, Justice Thomas, a Bush appointee, said. Justice Alina Kagan, considered a member of the court's liberal wing, asked the attorney why one state would have power to determine which candidates would be on the ballot for a nationwide election. Why should a single state have the ability to make this determination, not only for their own citizens, but also for the nation, she asked the attorney, adding the move would be quite extraordinary. And that report from Jack Phillips, reporting for the Epoch Times.
Hello, Greensboro. Hello, Greensboro. I'm thrilled to be back in beautiful North Carolina with thousands of proud, hardworking American patriots. That's what you are, American patriots. We need a lot of patriots in this country based on the way we're doing. We need some patriots. Over the past few weeks, we've been on a rocket to the Republican nomination. It's been a rocket. I didn't win Iowa, you won Iowa, we all won Iowa together in a record. We won it in a record, double the previous record. That's not bad. New Hampshire, in a record, double the previous record. We actually got more votes than anybody in the history of the New Hampshire primary. That's pretty good. We just won Nevada. And we got 98% of the vote. Sorry about the 2%. We had an off day. We were missing 2%. The Virgin Islands, we won unanimously. Thank you, Virgin Islands. Beautiful place. Go to the Virgin Islands sometime. And 1 week ago, we won South Carolina, beating a certain governor by unprecedented numbers and getting double the number of votes of any previous candidate in the history of South Carolina. How about that? And as you know, today we have two contests. We have Missouri and we have the remainder of Michigan. And I will tell you in advance what just happened, because we just found out as I was coming up, looks like we're winning 100% of both. 100%.
Your office objected to us getting Delta records for flights that you may have taken with Mr. Wade.
I object to you getting records. You've been intrusive into people's personal lives. You're confused. You think I'm on trial. These people are on trial for trying to steal an election in 2020. I'm not on trial, no matter how hard you try to put me on trial.
So my question was, do you have any problem?
I object to getting any personal records of mine.
We're not dealing with privilege through a witness.
And I'm not, I'm not dealing with privilege. What we had offered to put them in camera for the court to review, and I just want to know if she has any
That's
problem.
That's something you deal with a witness.
I just want to make this one point, if I may, which is that Tommy Robinson, you may not like him, you may not care about him, you may think he's an asshole, you may love him. It doesn't matter to me what you think. In that regard, you can think all those things. This court case is about a Section 35, which is another kind of dispersal order. Because he went to the protest against anti-Semitism, he was having his breakfast, he was arrested, he was given a Section 35, or he was called on his Section 35, which said he couldn't be there. He could very well end up in prison. And all I want to say briefly, I know we're running out of time, is do you see how the law is not the law? How if you're Greta Thunberg and you're being paid to push net zero, you are let off because the courts will say, oh, well, it wasn't Greta's fault. It wasn't explained clearly. Poor Greta. And the net zero mafia get another opportunity to have the headlines say, we've got to save the planet. Polar bears, penguins. But if you're Tommy Robinson and you're given a Section 35, which is similar to a Section 14, and you're having breakfast quietly and you're arrested, you're going to end up in prison.
Well, if you're having a birthday today on the 5th of March, a very happy birthday to you. Now, the census was held after a two-year delay on this day in 2013, on the 5th of March. Now, the New Zealand five-yearly census has been scheduled for the 8th of March in 2011, but after the Canterbury devastating February earthquake, the government statistician Jeff Buskand and Statistics Minister Morris Williamson announced that it would not go ahead. Statistics New Zealand's Christchurch operation had been significantly disrupted, and the exodus of people from the city would have skewed the results. Cancelling the census so close to the due date costs around $65 million. All of the forms have been printed, and the contractors had delivered them to 500,000 houses. Statistics New Zealand recognised there would be a long-term cost as well, so the government agency would have to continue to rely on outdated data from 2006. The census has only been cancelled on two other occasions, in 1931 as an economic measure during the Depression, and in 1941 because of the Second World War. Neither of these censuses were rescheduled, leading to a two-decade-long gap. The census plan for 1946 was, however, brought forward 6 months to September 1945, so electorate boundaries could be redrawn in the time for the first post-war general election. All that happened on this day. Not all of that, but you know, some of it did. That's where the census was held after a two-year delay. On this day, 5th of March 2013. Well, that's This Day in History, brought to you by The World at Five with Grant Edwards. Yeah.
Breaking news from batshit bonkers Britain, where Labour have finally decided to withdraw their support from their candidate in Rochdale, a gentleman called Azhar Ali. He was saying things that were frightfully popular with the Muslim massive up there and the Palestinian, pro-Palestinian mob he represents, things like Jews were responsible for October the 9th and other wildly anti-Semitic stuff. He would have got elected for sure, but finally Keir Starmer thinks it might not do the PR of the Labour Party too much good, so they've pulled their support. In other news, the Sussexes have rebranded to Sussex.com with a big picture of Meghan on the front of their website. I mean, lipstick and pigs come to mind, doesn't it? You can take a cheap actress, you could have her cosplaying as a devoted girlfriend to Bagger Royal, but ultimately you're still left with a trailer trash cheap actress. And finally, it's February the 13th. Brooklyn Beckham has a new recipe. It's called a pancake, and it involves eggs and flour and milk. Who'd have thought? That's it from Batshit Bonkers Britain.
What the Pope just did. He issued a decree saying that Catholic priests, the Catholic Church, may now bless homosexual couples, lesbian couples. This is unprecedented in the history of the Catholic Church and of Western Christendom. And though they tried to rationalize it by saying, well, it's not necessarily blessing the union. No, it says specifically couples. This is monumental. And we have not even yet begun to see the repercussions that are coming down the road. Not only for the culture, but for end time prophecy and the apostasy and the church. The man who officially issued that decree from the Pope, whom the Pope put in charge of the office of doctrine to replace the other man who said God cannot bless sin. It just came out that this guy had written a book where he speaks of orgasms and women's private parts, but includes a vision of having sex with Jesus. This is the one who's now in charge of Catholic doctrine. Now, there was a great backlash to what the Pope did, his opening the door to the blessing of homosexual unions. The Pope responded saying that the opposition was just, quote, from small ideological groups. In other words, he's doubling down on this. But then there was the case, the small case of Africa. The African bishops and priests said, no way are we going along with this sin. The Pope responded, listen, that Africa was a, quote, special case. To agree with the Bible is now apparently a special case. You're part of a small ideological group, or you're from Africa. The Pope continued saying, quote, for them, meaning the Africans, homosexuality is something bad from a cultural point of view. Now, let me say that again. He said, for them, the Africans, homosexuality is something bad for them from a cultural point of view. I thought the Bible said that homosexuality is a sin. But now I've learned it's not at all. It's just because that in Africa, they see it as bad, but not apparently the rest of us. We don't. Apparently what the Pope is saying is we don't. It's only getting worse. And I told you what it was. It's very simple. It's called apostasy. Now, is it possible that God has actually weighed in on this? Can God give a sign by using a statue, an image of stone, or a sign concerning judgment, using that? Now, make note, it's not about God condoning an image of stone or a statue, but can he make his will known by using such objects? Well, he already did. The Bible records that the Philistines took the Ark of the Covenant into their temple of Dagon. They put it near the idol, the statue of Dagon. In the morning, they found the statue of Dagon bowed down on its face before the ark. They set it back. Next morning, they find it again bowed down before the ark, but now with its hands and its head cut off. It was a sign of the reality of God and the falsehood of Dagon and God's judgment on false gods. But yes, the answer is yes, God can and has used statues or idols to manifest signs or messages, and you're going to see that right now. Even if you caught a glimpse of this before, we're going to open up the significance, what it actually means. Catholic doctrine states, and Catholic belief has been, that the Pope sits in the chair or the office of Peter. That's a whole nother issue. But that is the Catholic belief and claim. According to that belief, Pope Francis sits in the succession and office and authority of the Apostle Peter. There is a statue of Peter, the office of which Francis claims. It stands in South America, the land from which Francis comes. Further, the statue of Peter stands in Argentina. Argentina is the homeland of the Pope. Further, the statue is located in the province of Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires is where the Pope comes from. He was over it before he became Pope. So the statue is of the office that the Pope claims in the land that the Pope is from, in the nation that is the Pope's nation, in the province of the city in which the Pope was presiding over. So what happened? It didn't happen long ago. What happened was a bolt of lightning came down and struck the statue. Does every lightning strike mean judgment? No, but this one is too much. It strikes the sign of the office in the land, in the nation, in the province of the Pope. And it turns out there are major lightning rods around the statue to prevent this, so this shouldn't have happened, but it happened anyway. But it's not only where the statue was and where the bolt of lightning came, it was when it all came, when the lightning struck the statue. It was on December 17th, 2023. Anything significant about that date? Well, yeah. December 17th happens to be the birthday of the Pope. So you have the office, the land, the nation, the province, the time, the birthday, all pointing to the present Pope. But something else. It struck the statue on December 17th. On December 17th, Pope Francis was preparing to do something, to issue that decree that would open the door to homosexuality in Catholic doctrine and practice and life. So the lightning bolt struck the statue of Peter, not only on the Pope's birthday, December 17th, but the very day the Vatican was planning to release that colossal decree that would change everything, the very next day. It wasn't just that the lightning bolt struck the statue. It's what it did. Now, that's a halo around the head. What does a halo symbolize? It symbolizes holiness, the holiness of the person around whom is the halo. The lightning bolt removed the halo from the statue. It removed the sign of holiness on the statue that points to Pope Francis. The sign would say, there is no holiness. The act of blessing homosexual couples was an unholy act. And that wasn't all. The hand is holding the keys, as in the keys of Peter. From the scripture, when the Lord says, I will give you the keys to the kingdom. What you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Saying that, Peter and the authority of the church, believers, are given authority, access, power, and a connection to heaven and the will of God. What did the lightning bolt do? The lightning bolt removed the keys. It melted them away, removed them. And what is that a sign of? The keys are a sign of authority, saying authority is gone. No spiritual authority. The authority of God only comes inside the will of God. If you go outside the will of God, you can't wield the authority of God. If you disobey the ways of God, you have no authority. And if any man goes against the will of God and instructs others to do the same, they have no authority at all. But a key is also about access, a link to heaven, and a link to the things of God. The key is removed. There is no more access, or there is no access at all. It's a closed and locked door. In the Bible, the right hand is a symbol of strength and power. No power, no strength. In the Psalms, it's written, "If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its cunning." In other words, if I forget the purposes of God. Well, the Pope forgot the purposes of God. The right hand was destroyed. In the book of Kings, there's a king named Jeroboam, an evil king. He builds a pagan shrine and an altar. He's about to sacrifice on it when a prophet of God comes and rebukes him. Jeroboam orders his men to seize the prophet. He lifts up his hand as he orders the prophet's arrest. It goes against the will of God. Immediately, God strikes his hand. So this hand withers up. So here is the hand of the statue, here all pointing to the Pope. It was struck and destroyed. The Pope had instructed this decree against the will of God. And so this is not a sign of good, it's a sign of evil. The Pope ordered the Catholic Church may now bless homosexual unions. According to Catholic practice, blessings are given through the right hand. The officiant is to extend his right hand and bless. So what happened? The very day before that decree to issue the go-ahead on the Catholic Church and priest blessing with their right hand, homosexual unions, the lightning struck the right hand, the hand of blessing. It eviscerated it, meaning there is no blessing. There can be no blessing. All blessings are nullified. You know, the previous head of the doctrine office said God cannot bless sin. The Pope said, in effect, God can bless sin. The Catholic Church can bless sin. And so the hand that blesses was struck down, in effect, destroyed. In other words, God cannot bless sin. There is no blessing, only a curse. And a curse on those who would bless what God has declared to be sin. Those of you in any church or ministry that blesses this, that which God clearly calls sin, do not in any way raise your hand to bless such things. The hand that is raised to bless that which God calls sins is the hand that is raised against God. It will be cut off. If you are in any church that blesses such things, talk to them that they might change. Pray for them. If they don't, then leave, because a curse rests upon that place. And now God nullifies the blessing of sin and it becomes a curse. Whether you're Catholic, Protestant, or anything else, you cannot entrust your salvation to any man, any organization, anything except God. Man can go off, but God and his word will never go off. The Bible says, let all men be liars, let God be true. God alone is our source. God alone is our shepherd. Follow him, regardless. There will be no religious seats or sections in heaven. Only, are you saved or not? Did you, for real, receive Jesus, Yeshua, the Messiah, into your life and turn from sin and follow him with all your heart? Were you born again, a true child of God? Did you live your life truly for him and with him and in him and by him? And if you haven't, you need to do that. You need to get right with God. The most important thing you can do. For the Bible says, God will not be mocked. The ways of sin lead to death, but the ways of God and repentance lead to life. Last thing. The statue of Peter in the province of Buenos Aires was one of two statues. The other statue was of Paul, the Apostle Paul. Now in that statue, Paul is holding up a sword of iron. It was untouched. Nobody claims to hold the office of Paul or his keys. But Paul said, lift up the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. In days of evil, in days of apostasy, it is not less important, but more important that you as a child of God hold up the word of God without bending, without compromise, without fear. The more the world falls away, the more you stand strong. And now I leave you with this word from the book of Ephesians from the Apostle Paul. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the full armor of God so that you'll be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. Because our struggle isn't against flesh and blood, but against rulers, powers, world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in high places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist on the evil day. and having done everything, to stand firm. Stand firm, therefore, having belted your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having strapped on your feet the preparation of the gospel of peace. In addition to all, take up the shield of faith by which you will be able to extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. All right. This is Jonathan Cahn. Until next time, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Shalom.
You're listening to Grant Edwards, 88.1 FM, The Wireless, the world at 5. Now, another hour of the best of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and noughties. This is The Wireless.